Welcome, everyone, to another wonderful episode of Build It Better. I am your host, Jesse Tomchuk, an architect at this dot software.
This dot lab.
With me, as always, is my co-host and compatriot, Adam. Adam, how are you today?
I am good. I am a developer at this dot labs.
That's what I was looking for. Lab software.
I don't know where Jesse works, but it's somewhere weird.
Lab software. Today, I am super excited to have Jake from Butter CMS here with us today. Hey, Jake, how's it going?
Hey, guys. It's my pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So today we're going to dive into Butter CMS as a headless CMS. We're going to get into sort of some of the gritty details. We tried to save it for the show, but we started early and covered some of it. So, you know, I feel like most of our audience knows what a headless CMS is, but Jake, why don't you give us the sort of angle from Butter CMS? What does Butter CMS as a headless CMS sort of differentiate and like bring to customers? Like, who shows up to Butter CMS and goes, "This is what I need"?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I personally founded Butter many years ago as an alternative to WordPress. So that's where my personal journey and pain started, was just kind of like a modern alternative to WordPress. And so it's from a headless CMS perspective, we borrow a lot from this kind of WordPress conventions as far as like having formal concepts of blog posts and formal concepts for pages. We have a new thing called collections, which are like tables of data. And so we're a little bit different from some other headless CMSs, which I think deal purely in abstract terms of just like content types and content. And those are the only two concepts you have. We have more formalized concepts of, again, post, pages, and collections. So we have more variety there to sort of more easily translate if you're coming from the WordPress world. A lot of e-commerce companies use us for sure. You know, that's a common challenge for e-commerce is a lot of e-commerce systems are really good at e-commerce-y things, product inventory, orders, you know, shopping, checkout, that kind of stuff. But when it comes to like managing content for the rest of the site, like homepage, promotional pages, that kind of thing,
they're real bad.
Yeah, it gets a little bit dicey. So at least from what we've heard. So so they often will turn to Butter to help with, you know, kind of the rest of the content and driving people into their sort of main shopping channels.
Nice. I've worked with several sort of headless CMSs, and there's always a sort of like ramp up when we want to do like pages or layouts of content where it's like this abstract, we have lots of data and we're going to put data in places. And it's like, we need a route. Like they need a URL, a specific URL. Like, I'm thinking one particular, I had like terms of service, like we had legal, we had terms of service, and then we had like two other legal pages and they're like, they have to be at these URLs.
Okay.
And so like there was a challenge to like, okay, in my app, I had to like pull, like we had to create routes and like we had to create all these abstract layers for the front end to read in and build these pages on the fly. And it was like, it'd be really nice if I could just hit, this should be a page. But it was, and they had tutorials and they're like, this is how you should do it. But it was like, it was a lot of manual effort to sort of like stand those up. And they were always sort of janky.
Yeah. That's interesting feedback. So we aim to kind of solve that sort of scaffolding, right? Like a page is pretty, I think, agreed upon concept of like what that is. It should have a URL slug and, you know, publish dates and like all this kind of stuff. So we take a lot of, you know, we take all that sort of boring boilerplate stuff and handle that for you. We also have kind of a pretty cool feature that I personally love and our customers love called components. And I'm trying to sell it here, but like again, just as far as like how Butter is different from some other headless CMSs, our components feature allows you to have like really flat, like a really flat editing UI. So like a core concept in a lot of headless CMSs is like a reference, some of them call like a reference field or a linked field or something like that, where you have one content type linked to another content type. And that does all sorts of crazy things on the backend database for us. We could talk about that later. You know, often to achieve like a really complex page, like you were talking about, like a page will have a hero component or something like that at the top. And the hero has like multiple slides. And in some headless CMS systems, you have to create like, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 levels of relationships, like from the top level parent page to like a hero component to like a slide component to like, you know, it kind of goes pretty deep.
Yep. And that hero must have a slide component. That slide component must be made up of images. So you go and you add your images and then you to a slide, and then the slide is added. Like It's very, oh man,
it's deep. A lot. It goes deep, right? And so from a marketer UI perspective, and until you've actually done this, this isn't inherently intuitive, but like if you've ever lived this before, you can relate for sure. Like the marketer UI, you have to go like, you have to kind of go between like multiple screens and levels, and you sort of get lost of like, what am I even working on right now? Like, I'm just trying to like create this page. I'm just trying to create like a hero section of this page. Like, it's a pretty conceptually simple thing. But when you go in the editing UI and you get lost many levels deep, it's kind of a disorienting experience. And so with Butter, we have a formal concept called components that allow you to create like really sort of complex page layouts all from one UI in Butter. You don't have to like switch between tabs or dive multiple levels deep in sort of your content tree structure per se. So I think that's a nice differentiating thing for Butter as well, if you're looking
at that. Can I
repeat that back to you in different words, just to make sure I get an understanding of that? So is the idea then you've got like a component thing, a concept, and in that component concept, you've got structured data, but you can, and like nested structured data, so you can have lots of different types or whatever, but this way you can just say this component goes on this page, but all that other stuff about like where the data for that component comes from is just your other nested data structures. Is that correct?
The way I would describe it is within Butter, you can define a component. Basically, a component is sort of a set of kind of related fields. And so in the example of a hero component, you could have, a really simple hero component would have like a headline, a subheadline, and maybe a call to action button or something like that, right? And so in Butter, you could define a component called a hero component, and you could just give it three fields, like a text, you know, a short text field for the headline, a short text field for the description, that kind of a thing. But then you can create like a library of components. So you could have a hero component, and then you could have an image carousel component, and each of those have their own internal different schemas or different structures or field
types. Right. Okay.
But then on a single page in Butter, you can mix and match any of those components together from your component library, right? So you can build like really complex layouts using different component types,
If I were to rephrase that back to you, a component is a data structure type and it has like fields, and then you've got a page, which basically allows you, it's probably a tree that just allows you to like put components in this tree in whatever way you want. And then that's how your page is going to look. So you have this fully like editable tree for your page, and then you just slot components in where you need. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Cool. Yeah, exactly. So when you query the page from our API, and you use our component picker field type, we call it. It literally returns as like an array, like a JSON array, like an array of components is what it literally is. So, and so you get all of that kind of JSON data back in just one API call there.
Yeah. Now, from the opposite side, I have made tediously detailed documents for marketers on in the same situation where it's like, when you need to add an image to the slide carousel of a hero, add the image. You will go to the slide carousel category. You will add that image to that slide carousel category. As long as that slide carousel category is the right one on that hero page, it will show up.
That's
like
right.
There's, because it's nested data and they're layered like that, the input is layered like that. So you never add the image to the hero. You have to find the particular tier of which that category, but then you don't add it there. You have to add the data and then go over to the slider and say, that data that I just added,
connect it,
be part of this collection.
Yeah.
And as long as that collection is like, and then it sort of bubbles up.
But my brain immediately goes, yeah, I get why you do that.
Yeah.
Like
Mark, you know what doesn't happen? People who actually put this stuff in are like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
This is dumb.
But I get it, right? Yeah. You have like, you know, let's say an event type data structure, and it's like, it's these are your events, and you want it to appear on both the calendar, but you also wanted to, you know, certain ones like the next three to appear on like the homepage in like a little widget or something. So you don't want to like duplicate that work. You want to have an event type, but then you got to somehow tell your people who are actually using the CMS, the website, to be like, okay, but you have to just add the content type and then connect it to the other parts, or put the special tag in it so it appears here or something.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's interesting. And that's where our collections, like that third data type I talked about, collections are like just think of them as tables of data. They're probably most analogous to a generic like content type concept. And so for us with collections are great for the example that you mentioned, Adam, where you do have like the same kind of piece of content that does appear across multiple pages. And so if you want to, you can, in Butter, you can model that out where you do put that event data into a collection, and then you can have, you know, as many pages as you want reference that particular event using a reference field. So you can actually create that relationship from pages to collections or collections to other collection items. So it really is just like, fundamentally, is this content that you're working with, is this really going to show up across multiple places and multiple UIs? If it is, then you can make the argument that it should live in a collection as a central source of truth. So you could just manage that event in one place, and then any changes you meant to the, you know, event name or image, those get propagated everywhere that it's linked to. That's the benefit of kind of that approach. But you know, if you're working with like a one-off kind of promotional landing page that has a bunch of different components and carousels, and those won't ever appear anywhere else, it's kind of brutal to have to like go and set up all those deep relationships just for that like one-off kind of content. So
can I ask you, so that sounds great. It sounds great that you have that separation in Butter CMS between like these like collections, which can serve that one purpose, and then just sort of the page and components, which can serve more of the other purpose, probably the more common purpose, I would say. Did you start there, or did you like evolve to that?
Oh my gosh. So rewinding to the very beginning days of Butter, where we started was the blog. We were just blog only. So when I founded Butter, it wasn't, I had the CMS, first of all, because I'd never heard of that term. I didn't even know it was like a thing. It was just more of like an API first CMS is how I thought of it. Because really, like I mentioned before, the origin of Butter was just my personal pains of trying to get WordPress to integrate into a modern technology stack. Because I put it in back then, in my personal circumstance, I was leading engineering at a startup, and we were using Django and Python to build an energy marketplace, kind of a Kayak for energy of sorts. Anyway, so we had this custom proprietary platform built in Django and Python, and we needed to add CMS to it. And so I went the WordPress route, everybody uses WordPress. Let's just like plug that in. And it was not easy at all. It was a very kind of painful experience. Again, headless WordPress was not a concept, like headless was not a term at all back in the day. So fast forward through all of that, I sort of came to like, well, how should a modern CMS work? You know, there's all these frameworks, like there's so many frameworks and technologies that companies use to build and developers use to build nowadays. So what's this, like, I want a CMS to kind of work with any technology stack that I'm working with. Like, I don't want, how the CMS is built, what technology the CMS is built with should play like zero role in whether or not I can use it. You know, I thought that was kind of a crazy thing. And so that's really led me down the API, like it has to be API based, right? So now you have sort of this pure data layer where any technology stack can query and pull that data in. Anyway, sorry. So back to your original question, this is just sort of like me trying to get a business project thing off the ground of like, is this a problem for anybody? Like, does anyone else have this problem? Would anybody pay any money for this thing? And like, what's the smallest thing I could build as just a sole developer trying to, you know, build something that somebody would like actually pay money for? And so I decided to just go after the blogging use case, because that's really common like denominator, like every company has a blog. So way back in the day, V1 of Butter launched with just as like a blog plugin, actually just as a blog plugin specifically for Rails and Django were the two web frameworks that I kind of focused on. So that's all it was. The vision was always to become like a full-fledged, kind of what we are today, like a full-fledged CMS. But we started off just with blogging capability.
So were you serving up via the API just REST endpoints?
Yeah, that's right. So it was just some of the first endpoints that I built were a post endpoint to serve up your blog posts. So we were built on Django using Django REST framework as the plugin that we use to power the REST API. So we built like a post endpoint to fetch your blog posts. We built a authors endpoint to fetch like the blog authors. We built the categories endpoint to fetch your categories, and a tags endpoint to fetch your blog tags. So we built like four or five different endpoints, very basic kind of standard bloggy kind of stuff. Nothing super fancy or crazy or complicated there, but that was like the, I would say, kind of what I went to market with a first version of Butter.
And can I ask you, and maybe we're going down a sidetrack you don't want to, because I keep asking dumb questions, but I ask you, so what was the editing experience like there? Did they have to go to Butter CMS to edit, or was like, oh, well, no, that's just a different API that they have to hit?
Yeah, no, good question. So to the editing experience was and still is today, because we're SaaS based, we host and maintain the whole editing UI. So if you want to go edit your content, you just go to buttercms.com, you log into your account. You know, we're a multi-tenant kind of solution and architecture. So everybody, you know, you just log into your account there, boom, you go to your blog post dashboard, you get a list of your own blog posts, you know, and we provide that whole kind of editing experience there. Yeah.
So my interest is the moment when you had those sort of standard inputs, right? Post, author, categories, and you added the ability for the user to create fields on those like posts or on their content. What does the backend scheme look like? How does that filter back from buttercms.com when I log in to create a field of like, you know, published by or dry, you know, whatever fields of string or field type of date that I create? What happens to that scheme on the back end? Because it seems to go from like very straightforward of like post author categories, right? I can see the database table, like I can
I
see the
miss those
tables,
days.
right?
And then
Like
suddenly explodes into
and then I'm
complexity.
like, well, now they're like soft data, like they're creating fields. And I was like, well, you're not creating columns on the fly. Are we just doing blob data in the what happens at this point?
Well, and
Yeah,
I'm
good
willing to
question.
bet. And then how did you refactor all the mistakes you made at that point?
Oh my
But
gosh. Yeah. No, you guys are bringing me back. I miss those days. I mean, yeah, we effectively allow people to your question. I haven't really thought about it this way, but you know, we effectively allow people to kind of build their own databases, you know, on top within our database is kind of what happens. So we use PostgreSQL database. It's a structured relational database. And yeah, you're right. You know, over time, we had to just kind of invent a totally flexible kind of data model to describe and model out these concepts of, again, I mean, if I were to start over, we might have different naming conventions and stuff, but effectively it's, you know, kind of columns and rows in a database table is roughly like what our content model does. The most complex part of that is definitely the columns part of that, where you know, you're allowing people to define the columns on the table, or you know, when you're adding a text field to your schema in Butter. So if you go add a text field to your page or an image field or something like that, you know, you're conceptually it's creating, you know, like a table. It doesn't literally do that though. So we just have like tables in our own database that and concepts where we're storing those configurations basically. And then those configurations are getting mapped up to the actual content or like the rows of the tables kind of in real time. So when we're doing the serialization, both when you're using our editing UI, because our editing UI, if you think about it, if you go to edit a page in Butter, to load that editing UI, you know, it looks like just a bunch of short text fields and just simple stuff. But that entire editing UI is actually completely dynamic based on how you defined your own schema. And so just to load the editing UI, we have to kind of go do a lookup of how did you define your schema? What are all those components and what are the structures of those components internally? And load all that in dynamically, do it as quickly as we can. But then we also have to do a similar exercise on the API side when you're serializing that data to like more raw JSON, where your application's pulling that in. We have to do a similar exercise there. Because the, you know, the entire sort of payload structure, the keys of that, how nested it is, that kind of thing, that's all driven by how you configured your content types within the Butter database. So yeah, it going from the good old days of just having blog posts to allowing, you know, Jesse and Adam to go in there and go crazy and create like all sorts of different fun, you know, page types and collections and stuff like that, added a lot of complexity. Sorry, added a lot of complexity. And, you know, so like the more flexibility is, the more complexity there is for us, the more complexity there is. Generally, it can really lead to slower performance as well. Like it's really easy to get super slow performance when you have all that because the queries are insane that you have to run. So anyways, we've spent a lot of time working on that performance issue of optimizing queries, caching stuff. Cache is kind of our best friend, and we can talk about that more, but
Sure, let's do it now even. Like, because my next question was going to be, okay, I can imagine how I would do that. Like, okay, I'd have these tables that sort of reference other columns, which reference data that I would query, and then each of those nested types would have to be like nested joins, I guess, and blah, blah. I can sort of picture my head brute forcing this, but I can only imagine that every time I would query, it would be like, okay, 30 seconds later, here's your results. And maybe the answer is boring. Maybe it's going to be like, yeah, well, we optimized every little query and we cached where we could. But I'm curious, do you have any like interesting or whatever things about how you kept that performant?
Yeah. So it's been an evolution over time. Like I mentioned before, like, we don't think of Butter as like V1 versus V2 versus V3. It's just really kind of a real time evolution as we've grown, as customers have used us in new and interesting ways and use cases that we haven't seen before, doing things at much bigger volumes. The API also has, it's an API. So we give people the ability to do things with it, like ordering how the results come back or filtering which results come back. And that little reference field concept I mentioned before, that thing seems innocuous, but that wreaks havoc on serialization when one page could link to 100 other pages and those pages could link to 30 other pages, and like, boom, you have exponential effects of the amount of content that could sort of accidentally be pulled back in just one API call, so that's introduced a lot of complexity. So over time, I mean, in V1, there was no caching. I quickly learned, like, we need, definitely need to use this memcache thing to speed things up. So memcache was kind of the first layer that we introduced, especially on the serialization side of things. So, a decent amount of time and just serializing, just think of, a page as an object or something like that. And it may be its own standalone object, or it may have that reference concept that I mentioned before. So just serializing that payload, that pretty intensive. So we never let that go to waste, basically. So anytime we do that effort, we do our best to cache that in memcache. And then we also introduced another level of caching, at like a global CDN level. So we use a service called Fastly. It's akin to like a Cloudflare, where basically that now sits in front of all of our platform, and like any API request that you make to Butter first goes through a Fastly global CDN edge node. So 99.9% of the time when you make an API call to Butter, you're actually just pinging the nearest, Fastly CDN node. And more likely than not, getting just a cache JSON response back, and those come back very, very fast. So that was a huge performance improvement there. So again, when you're using an API, most of the time, it avoids actually hitting your application servers. So that's just insane performance there. And then even if it gets through the application servers, then we have layers of caching within there as well. So, and then we've iterated on our caching strategy just many, many, many times. How we do that. So whenever you use Butter, if you go into Butter and you just, tweak some text in a page and you click the save button or click the publish button, there's all sorts of stuff that we do behind the scenes to do cache purging, right?
I was gonna say the cascading cache busting,
exactly.
Just waterfall across the globe for this change.
For this little headline change. So you got it. That all happens kind of behind the scenes. It's completely obfuscated from you. You wouldn't know it. And we do our best to make that cache purging happen as fast as possible, so that, when you go click that publish button in Butter, you tab over to your API Explorer, or you make the next API call, you see that updated value coming back, right away. So,
maybe it doesn't, but I'm just curious and I have absolute ignorance. Does it like also after invalidating the cache, does it rebuild the cache like before the user has to even like hit the thing? Or does it like, no, we only build the cache on the first hit sort of thing?
That was an evolution actually in our caching strategy, what you just described. So previous, like earlier days, we would only build it when people would ask for it. Mm-hmm. But then we were like, it'd be nice if people, we want to have like our API response times as fast as possible, like all times. And so we evolved the caching strategy where now we will actually go and, we call it pre-warming the cache. So if you make a change to your page, we'll actually pre-serialize it in the background and then just dynamically swap out the caches once that serialization payload is ready. It's effective, practically speaking, you never notice it. If you have an inordinate amount of content or something like that, just from an architecture perspective, the one drawback to that is it could slightly delay when you see the content update because it has to sort of do the rendering kind of in the background. But we found in practice that it really doesn't, you never really even see that delay. The benefit is that you always have a warm cache. So you're always getting like a cached response back. So your API calls are always fast.
Right. So your reads are just like always great. Always.
Yeah, exactly.
And then your writes, maybe if you could possibly notice if you had a large amount of data, might delay for a little while.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
I feel like that's a pretty solid trade-off, right? Because how many reads versus writes are you doing on a regular basis? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, we came. Yeah, we basically came to that same sort of conclusion. At once upon a time, again, it was we did more of, again, what you described of you click that publish button and we just blow away all the cache and we just wait for you to make the next API call. Then we try and like serialize it in real time there. And that first call could take a little while to do, again, depending on the complexity of the data model of the page and the amount of content you're trying to serialize. So again, we came to the same conclusion where it's like, let's just keep it fast all the time. And maybe there's a slight delay in seeing that new value come back. But even then, like I said, it doesn't really play out that way in practice. You don't.
Right. Because the stale content gets refreshed so fast that even switching from like, okay, I just edited. Now I'm going to go check and look at the website. Yeah, it's probably.
And by now it's updated. Yeah, exactly.
So.
Yeah.
Yep. So we started with REST API endpoints. Are we still like when I'm leveraging Butter CMS? Is it a RESTful endpoint? Do I have like GraphQL? Do I have like a special query language now on top of that? Like, because other headless CMSs have like expanded upon this abstraction of like, yeah, we have our own query language. You know, you have to learn how to like make join calls through this like sort of GraphQL like thing.
Right.
And else, where does Butter CMS fall? Like we started with posts and contents and authors in RESTful APIs. And what is the evolution of those endpoints now when I'm building out the sort of site?
Yeah. So now we have an additional set of endpoints for pages, and then also collections. So we, again, those three core concepts of posts, pages, collections. So we have endpoints for all of those. We try and keep our API really clean and ideally easy and intuitive to work with. So we don't have an inordinate amount of endpoints, which I think is a good thing if you're just trying to like get, you know, a CMS integrated. We've over time expanded the sort of parameters that you can pass into those endpoints that I talked about before, as far as making it do what you want, sorting, filtering, levels of serialization, for example. So again, if you're using that reference field concept, you can actually control how many levels deep you want us to serialize for you, up to a limit. We do cap that because that can get kind of crazy pretty quick.
Yeah, for sure.
So
do you know offhand where the cap is, or is it dynamic?
Five.
Okay, cool.
I think it's five levels, yeah.
Who would want to go deeper, honestly? But
yeah. I don't know. If you need to go deeper,
people try.
You need to sort your life out if you need to go deeper than five.
It's the law of numbers.
We need all the data in one call. It's like, that's 100 megabytes.
Somebody's going to do it. If you allow it, somebody's going to make the worst query you've ever seen.
Yeah. So on that point, actually, it was interesting. One customer, so, you know, we added the ability to filter down content based on value. So, like, give me a set of pages where the headline equals XYZ is the text or something like that. Simple filter. And someone kind of took that to an extreme where they try to, and you can do multiple filters. So you could, you know, kind of add them together. And someone did that. One customer did that like for, I think, 20 fields or something like that. And we use Django, which has an ORM. And so we saw some really weird error messages we've never seen, like database running out of disk space and like all this sort of stuff. We're like, oh, wait, what's going on? You know, and then you look at the query behind the scenes of what that thing was generating.
Just imagine this like giant block of source.
Especially because it's generated too, right? So they're just like, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So that was fun. But that's, you know, just one example of like, if you let people, if it's possible, they will try it basically.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand why my live search doesn't work hitting the Butter CMS endpoints.
Yeah. So yeah, but yeah, we yeah, so we have I think a pretty kind of minimal set of endpoints, again, just tightly correlated to the sort of the content types we serve. We don't have GraphQL. We haven't made up our own. We haven't made up our own query language. I just
You say
don't,
that
you
almost
know.
like it's a bad thing.
Well,
I think
yeah.
it's important to say not a bad thing here.
Yeah. So, I mean, we haven't done that. So no, it's a pretty simple, clean API. We're not trying to do anything too fancy. We're really just trying to make it really easy and intuitive for devs to understand like how to query the API and how that data is going to come back and come back in an expected format, so you can parse it and render it out in your app and just do that as quickly as possible. And then we're trying to keep our API really fast. So GraphQL is interesting. I know it's really popular. It's
I
not to
feel
say
like it's
we'll never
really
do it,
popular
but
in a very niche echo chamber.
yeah. I mean, just practically speaking, from a I guess putting the business hat on, most, mid-market e-commerce companies and sort of larger enterprises, they're not necessarily clamoring for GraphQL. So it's just not really a critical thing. If I could wave a magic wand and have it, that would be cool. Talking about all the von caching challenges that we've had to solve, though, doubling that or replicating all of those or going through that all again for some crap like GraphQL
Well, and
infrastructure.
then by field, you have to do it now if you're doing it in
And
GraphQL too.
yeah, so it's not a trivial thing, I would say to add. So we're biding our time on that one.
Nice. Are your the clients who are building out, there's an explosion of front-end frameworks.
Yeah.
Several years ago, most of it would have been statically built at statically built it at compile time. I'm thinking like if I used Next, I would have done like get static server and like pulled everything from Butter CMS and run a build and then pushed it out. Do you have clients doing static builds? Like, I mean, Gatsby is sort of, I think we've all hit that point where it's like static builds are great except for when the build time is like 4.5 minutes every time there's a change. So
Any
we sort
change.
of had that
Yeah.
field, but are your clients pulling dynamically into their website, server side rendering, statically rendering? Like, do you have a feel for that?
Yeah, great question. A bit of both, honestly. So, and that's what's been interesting. For us, as far as like how we try and have a great developer experience, needless to say. And so one thing we do with that is we try and have great documentation for as many technology stacks as we possibly can. So if you go check out our, docs page, buttercms.com/docs, we have like 20, I forget how many, it's dozens at this point. And so we've spent a lot of time and effort as a company trying to do our best to support as many technology frameworks as we possibly can. Again, going back to the early days of Butter, just my own personal pain, the two frameworks that we originally supported were Django and Rails. So completely dynamic frameworks. And so there was never this concept in my mind of that I know there's a whole concept of Jamstack and this whole sort of thing. Again, that was not a thing that only kind of came about within, the last, I don't know, four
Three
or
or
five
four,
years or something like
yeah.
that. Yeah.
When, real quick, time wise, when you started up, are we 10, 2016, 2015?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Mentally, I'm like trying to put like the tech, the stack, the problems, 'cause the
Yeah.
lack of API with WordPress. Like, I'm trying to put that in my
Like,
timeline,
where were
and
you? Yeah.
everything was like 10 years ago in my head, right?
Right. Yeah.
The Matrix came out 10 years ago, as far as I
Buffy the
can.
Vampire Slayer's Once More with Feeling episode, the musical episode, 22 years ago.
God, I just
Oh my
got
gosh.
like,
Time
de I
flies.
just
It's
got
crazy.
old
Jake's
inside.
like, I have
I
no idea
know.
what you guys are
I
talking
about.
Yeah.
So yeah, now with the Jamstack, you guys are keeping up on what is essentially an endless list of integrations
Oh
and
yeah,
like.
there's a lot. Yeah. So to your question, right? I never sort of pigeonholed Butter to think of like, oh, we need to pair really well with static site generators like exclusively. That's been just more of a recent, again, recent within 3 to 5 years kind of development. But a lot of our customers, just practically speaking, use us on totally, old school, .NET, like nothing super fancy kind of architectures. We use Butter. We're in Django. So, Rails, Django, .NET, Java, and then yeah, there's a whole ton of, I mean, the JavaScript frameworks can't even keep track of them.
But yeah. I mean, realistically, it's a REST API, right? So like
it's a REST API.
All you've got, and I see this page here that you pointed out, and it's just like got like three rows of integrations. These are all just like gravy or whatever. These are just like, hey, we've made it even easier for you if you happen to be using Astro or Android or Django or Express, right? This is just
exactly.
I mean, that's all just even easier. That's just extra Jello on my dessert plate. I don't know what that means.
Extra Jello on your dessert plate?
Yeah, well, I have an extra. I have Jello already, and then somebody just snuck a little extra, and I'm like, thanks. Extra. Like, you didn't need to, but this is great.
What flavor is this Jello?
Well, it's always red. Like, red's the best.
Oh, because see, if you grew up in the Northwest, like I did, you will often find green Jello at
green Jello
community.
Is that lime?
Yeah, it's awful, is what it is.
No,
it's awful.
No, it's delicious. It's
and then there's a particular section of the region that they will take cocktail fruit right in the cans with the syrup. They will drain the syrup and they will put that fruit
in the Jello.
The green Jello. And then make them. No. Oh, this is bigger than me. Oh,
that's how we eat Jello. Of course, if you're gonna bring it to a party, you gotta have fruit.
You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of funerals because that is the only time I ever saw it is when somebody died.
Back to the tech then.
Oh no.
Let's get out of this depressing topic about fruity Jello. Jello we were just talking
top,
about. So yeah, there's gonna be this big. I mean, obviously, you probably even don't care because I would assume the Jamstack way or the initial build thing is like, I'm going to make requests to my like root API endpoints, get like, you know, a ton of data, and then then I won't call it for a long, long, long time. And then I'll make another call that does exactly that, as opposed to like probably the more regular, like, oh, they make a request for a collection because somebody went to their page, and they make a request for a page because somebody went to this page, you know, that kind of thing,
in like
all
time.
The time. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So we honestly see both. We've seen the full spectrum there, like fully dynamic sites, server-side rendered, where they're just, you know, calling the API in real time as page loads are coming in. We have the fully kind of a static build approach that you described, where they're using Gatsby or something like that. It's driven completely by the framework, right? Is it drives the API usage. So there's an upfront build process.
There is several of the headless CMSs will often have when they're sort of focused in on this Jamstack at build time, they'll have a webhook component that is like, hey, register, like when you publish data, we will webhook out to whatever random robot that needs to run a build, because that's like, you need to run a build. And so like, when do you run a build? Like, well, when you publish, like, and when do you publish? And you're like, well, I need my headless CMS to like tell us.
So we have that.
Nice.
That book capability. We put a lot of time and effort into the docs, and a lot of the docs we've actually created full kind of starter projects with like a nice onboarding flow where you can go and, you know, from zero to, if you go check out the Next.js project, for example, we have a deploy to Vercel button, right? And so you can just kind of go through our onboarding flow there, have a Next.js starter project up and running in just a matter of minutes. But the reason I mentioned that is because as a part of that, we also will configure your account automatically with a few different webhooks that talk to the Vercel endpoints in your own Vercel account that are basically the build endpoint that Vercel has set up. So our webhooks will, I think we listen for like page publish, blog post publish, you know, there's a bunch of different events you can listen to. And anytime those happen in the Butter CMS system, we'll just send a post request to Vercel, and then they will kick off a build. I think Netlify also supports that. That's really more of a hosting platform thing if they have that kind of capability to build based on a webhook event. But some of the newer ones do, which is really nice.
Nice. That is really slick. I have to say, I am really refreshed, like happily, like elated that it is just a simple REST endpoint and that it's not like... I think I've hit that bump in my life where it's like old and boring is more attractive than the shiny Jamstack stuff, where it's like, oh, it's just a REST stuff. Like, I know REST. It's Unix. I know this. But it's like simple and like concrete. Like, and Adam got my Jurassic Parks. But it's like simple and concrete. And like, I'm thinking about, you know, when we talked about the GraphQL 100-fold caching problem, it's like, well, I don't need any of that. Like, I just need stability, and I need fast reads, and I need simplicity, and I need some docs that make bloody sense, that aren't like, here's what we're gonna do, we're gonna query in this special language that you're gonna pick up as you go, and you're just like, that's not what I want anymore. I'm not on board.
Well, I almost wonder if that's because of the marketing focus, I guess, maybe because, well, maybe not, because I was just thinking like, you really want it to be a simple editing experience for marketer types or whoever's going to be in there, non-technical types. And then you just want it to be like a simple experience for like, hey, we hold your content and you can ask us for it. Right. And so like the simpler, the better. Yeah. It makes me, I can't say that on the air. I wonder what benefits bringing a whole new query language or whatever.
You get some really interesting sort of like niche, like dig details and dynamic loading and like live filtering and stuff like that.
An interesting use case. Does Butter CMS do anything if you were to try and set up like a real-time connection, like a WebSocket or something? Does it have any kind of option for that where it's like, I want my data to update for the users, even if they're already on the page?
We don't currently have like WebSockets capability where you connect our API. No, we don't have that. Yeah.
Just curious. See, now I've blown this thing wide open. Now they're going to be like, don't print that.
Edit that out. No, it's totally fine.
Luke, edit that out. No,
it's totally fine.
What you really want is the data to change right in front of them as they're on the page?
Well, I just mean like if they wanted that, not like, right. I don't know, there would be a, I don't even know. So you have an assets management thing too, that does all sort of image compression and stuff automatically. Is that like, I can only imagine.
Oh, is that like
has to be an entirely different subsystem that you then just kind of connect to your content.
Wait, like system. A Cloudinary asset thing?
Well, yeah, we wouldn't say that, but out loud.
It's not Cloudinary. We use a different yeah, service like, behind the scenes, but it effectively is an integration with a Cloudinary like service. We haven't built all of that. Thank goodness. But you wouldn't know it.
Yeah, basically. Nobody needs all that. I just need something simple. Like I'm always like, I need a place to put my images. No, with my content.
Jake was going to say, you do need that, but it all fits in with Butter. You don't even know, you don't leave, you're just all right in Butter, and it's the same thing you're used to.
Yeah, sorry to clarify, like we haven't built that, but we've built integrations with a service that does that for you. So so when you upload you can, you know, Jesse, you can just upload your images in the Butter, and that's totally cool. But then we also will like automatically compress those images and optimize them, because we have heard many, many times marketers, you know, will just take a picture with their smartphone and then upload the thing to their homepage. And, you know, that does not so good things for page speed. Brutal. Yeah. So people ask us, hey, can you guys just like help optimize these images? And so now we do. And so we automatically take that. We'll convert it to like WebP format as well. It's pretty cool. I mean, you can save like, we see, you know, 10x plus performance. Oh, yeah. Sometimes on the image.
I feel like those images, you know, in the headless space, the separation, like when I've done these projects, that my goal is to never hear from the content inputs, like the marketers and the people, like I just want them to do the work and not ever bother me. Like that is a win, right?
That's the goal. Yeah.
When months go by and they've never contacted me, everybody is successful.
Success. Yeah, exactly.
It's always the push and pull though, right? Yeah. Because if you give those people like full editing access, like a rich text editor, whatever, they make it look ugly. So design kind of wants to like hold in place and be like, okay, we need to restrict them to content types or something, because we don't want them to break the design. But then the marketer types are like, but we have all these like special things that just come up, you know, because it's Valentine's Day, we're going to change the whole site to look, you know, I don't know.
We call it snowflakes. There was someone who wanted to have snowflakes falling down the page one time.
And like, there you go. Somebody needs snowflakes. So
yeah, but like know, the
there's a push and pull there.
You that need separation. Yeah, like I want to be as far away as possible, right? Like I'll work on the stuff and the things you want, and you put in the content. But like when you have to reach, like when I have to come over and help, like facilitate the content, is when like the whole thing is sort of like, why are we doing headless in the first place?
Defeats the purpose.
Why am I here? Yeah. Like to upload images. Like why am I here?
Yeah.
So when it sounds like you've really covered the basics, like the fundamentals of like, image, like assets, like simple REST APIs, like dynamic schemes, pages, these are core concepts of like that I have struggled with multiple times in multiple other headless environments where it's like, how do I do a page again? Well, see, I wrote the documentation for it, and they're like, yeah, the documentation is like 6 pages long. And it's like, you're right. What page do you want?
That one's gonna be, exactly.
I will just get it for you.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And it's a great point. You guys like really hit on the nerve here. And, you know, part of our job as a company is to help. Not every company is the same, and different teams have different capabilities. Like sometimes we'll talk to folks where the marketers are legit, you know, hackers, and they know HTML and CSS, and they want a bit more flexibility, open up the content model a bit more so they can go in there and really have fine grained control over like everything. But then you see the other side of the spectrum where the marketers are not technical at all. You know, they're marketers and they just want to focus on the content and they don't want to have to be designers. They don't want to be, you know, worried about font sizes and, you know, font families and, you know, spacing and padding and margins and all this kind of stuff, image sizes. They just want to like put the content in, hit the publish and be done with it. And so for those teams, like a really, when, you know, we advise them to set up their content models in a really structured approach, like way more structured. Right. So that, again, the marketers can just can be focused on the content and not about having to be a designer per se. So
I know we're running out of time, but that sparks a question in my head is, so do you have a special kind of data type for rich types or something? Sorry, for rich text. I've just always wondered, like, rich text has always been a pain in my side, and I don't know if there's a good way to do it or not. And I'm just wondering, how do you handle that at Butter CMS, rich text editing and such?
So for rich text editing, we use a plugin called TinyMCE. So it's a WYSIWYG editor. So nothing super fancy or out of the ordinary there. One nice thing that we do allow, though, is we give you fine-grained control over the toolbar. So you can actually configure...
Limit.
Yeah, you can limit exactly... basically what the marketers can do with it. You can, so you can say like, you can only bold and italicize text. You can't even put links in if you want to do that, for example. If you want to have it wide open, you can, you know, allow them to embed tables and go to town.
And then that I'm just going to guess, presumably right in there, you could probably like, I'm going to add an image here and it goes to your image editing and uploading.
Yeah. It's all tightly integrated. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we have a tightly integrated media library. Yeah. And you can, they can even like, we have a little lightweight image editor too within the product. So you can actually just pop open, you can upload an image into Butter and then do some like, you know, cropping, formatting to it and that kind of a thing, which is nice. Cause then your marketers don't have to like have Photoshop or they don't have to like email it to you, Jesse. Oh, say, hey, can you like tweak this thing or like run it through your Photoshop? Cause I don't know what Photoshop is.
Yeah.
And
you know, thank you for emailing me this enormous image.
Yeah.
And is that little image editor, does that go through that service, that subservice that you
contract? Yeah, it does. Yeah. But it's all fully integrated within Butter.
Yeah.
So
you wouldn't notice. It's just Butter to any user. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. I'm just curious about how the back end was going. If you were like, yeah, we made one, we use it for the little one, but then we have this other system for any.
Oh, gotcha. No, it's all integrated. Yeah.
I like TinyMCE. I've used that multiple times in the past. It's really nice.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with
the nice pro features.
Yeah. So you just save that into a text field because it's already got all the little.
Yeah, it's a text field. It ultimately returns HTML to your app is what gets generated behind the scenes. Yeah.
Oh, and that's okay. HTML. Yeah. In my head, I was like, I wonder if you get some sort of intermediate step like a markdown-ish kind of thing or with tags or something that you gotta parse out and do yourself or something. But no, yeah, it makes sense. Just. Yeah,
see, and that, like, I think, again, this hits on the, like, the simplicity of the solution is not overthought, because there are others that will give you serialized text, rich text back that you have to SDK, like, you have to take their SDK and basically compile the serialization into HTML, and you're just like
when your parents are talking in code, but you know exactly what they're saying, by the way. Yes. You're not being real subtle, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, and it's an interesting, like, that, you know, idea of like, well, you know, it's rich text and we'll just serialize it in this sort of unique or, you know, format, and we'll send it down to you. And then you just use the SDK to like deserialize it. And then poof, you have your thing. And the solution for Butter CMS is, which you're just going to make HTML, so we'll just send you the HTML. Like,
yeah, we don't. Yeah, you don't have to deserialize or reserialize or anything. It's just
you're like it's fine. Yeah. Like, we'll just send you the stuff as it is. Like, how are you going to use it? I'm going to eventually. It's going to be an HTML. Cool. That's what we'll send you.
but
Jake, that's is that efficient over the wire when making web pages to just send me HTML? Like, these are the conversations.
Oh gosh, yeah. No, it's fine. It's okay. Yeah.
So I don't know if we asked you. So you have you said you have Postgres databases, and did we ask you? Was it a Django app that you've kind of got running as
the application? So the application is built on Django and Python. Our front end, when you log into Butter and are moving around the dashboard, we use Vue.js for kind of the front end side there to make it more interactive and such. Let's see. Yeah, we use Redis, Memcache. a lot of kind of performance stuff. But yeah, as far as the tech stack, the actual kind of software is built in, it's pretty clean. So yeah, Django Python, that also powers our API, and then again, yeah, Vue.js for the front end.
Cool.
Yeah,
Jesse.
That's amazing. I'm like ready. I've got like one tab open with like the docs, and I'm just ready to like go through and just like enjoy the simplicity of this idea and
I
make an
appreciate
account
it.
and play with it. Like
Awesome.
It really is appealing to, you know, to be so simple and straightforward and efficient in like the things and the idea and the concept, and like the, instead of these abstract blocks that are used any way you want and they're so flexible, it's like, well, you're going to need pages, and those pages are going to need components, and these cover 98% of use cases that we're constantly rebuilding over and over and over again. So
yeah,
I think you've really, whatever time you spent like listening to the customers and getting like that, those pain points, I feel like you've really nailed them, because I'm just like, yes, please stop making query languages and just give me a bloody page with a route.
I appreciate like, that. Yeah, I really appreciate that. I mean, and there's a line, yeah, with the philosophy. It's just like we've tried to take as much of that. Again, I think of it as just boilerplate stuff. Like, you know, 98% of people are doing it, and we're all doing the same stuff roughly. So it's like, how much of that can Butter do for our customers? And then so you guys can just like, you know, kind of solve CMS and like, and kind of get it done with in your marketer's hands. That's really the goal, is to, yeah, just kind of solve CMS for folks, and make it really fast to configure Butter, get it integrated into your app, and then hand it over to your marketers so that you can stop resizing images for them.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, Jake, I want to thank you so much for coming on to Build a Better and running us through this tech stack, giving us some sort of like gritty caching details and some structural schema details. Like, I'm still trying to put together the queries of schemes using a Postgres, using a relational data for dynamic types. Like, I feel like I'm
going to
make these conceptual tables that aren't real tables, but are just queries themselves. Yes, exactly.
I'm still like trying to figure it out too, so don't worry about it.
I feel like I need to draw this out like afterwards and be like, is that? No, that can't be right.
Yeah.
Because like we've used other ones that have dynamic, and they end up in like Mongo as like a data structure, and you get, you call the API and you get back like C_256, and that gives you the string name of the field. Oh, and right. Then you have a value of that field, and you're just like, this is not helpful. This is harder than it. You have to like decode the API because it's coming out as a doc type from like NoSQL.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that's another thing too on the developer experience front. This is like super important. You know, it's a subtle thing, but you hit on it. It's like with the API response, you won't see any like system level fields or data or things coming back that like aren't content. Basically, like anything you don't really care about, we don't return. It's just like the raw content, exactly how you content model it in Butter is directly reflected in how you see the API come back. So if you have a page with a headline field and a media field and a body field, the API response comes back exactly that way, and they're in the exact same order. So we try and just make it, again, really easy to sort of reason about how the API response is coming back, and because it's directly reflective of how you did the content modeling. So,
and that's an important lesson to learn from Butter CMS, because it's about, you know, it's about giving the users a good interface, right? And the users in this case on the API side are developers. And so we want to just give them a nice, simple use case. We don't want to add the cruft just because, oh, well, our backend has the cruft, so we'll throw that out there. No, you want to make this part of the user experience, which is for developers. So developer,
if I have to build one more map const type to string value, I'm going to lose my mind.
you've done a lot of this. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Like deep, oh, and yeah. He'll complain about it. If you let him.
Don't worry. Yeah. There's
we
a whole
like
other
to cut
show.
Him off. So this has been a whole,
this is another episode.
But yeah, thanks Jake.
Thanks guys. This has been a blast. Yeah. Thanks for the questions and the conversation. This has been a lot of fun.
And for all the listeners out there, of course, come back. I don't know if we're doing weekly releases or not, but I think probably next week. It might be me and Jesse, might be somebody else, might be Tracy and Ben, might be all of us. I don't even know. But come check us out. Learn something new. I don't even know what the topic is next week. But yeah, thanks for listening.
Something
fun being in your ears.
Something ridiculously complex for me to complain about instead of simple, amazingly. Oh, do you want to do the question?
We didn't do the thing. Yeah,
do the thing.
So at the end of every Build It Better episode, we like to do a thing called Would You Rather. We didn't think of it. Tracy did. She forces us to do it.
I have one. Would you rather have fruit cocktail green jello or ice cream?
Ice cream.
Now,
is both an option.
Oh,
oh my God. Yeah, like one together.
Oh, well, there's always room for Jello. You eat the ice cream first, then you can always eat the Jello.
That is so wrong. Oh, Jell-O is like a snack of the 90s. Like, I can't, like, do they still make Jell-O cups?
Well, it's funny you say that, because my kids, they just made Jell-O just the other day. Yeah.
Well, like from scratch? Totally, like, yeah, from powder?
You know, I don't know what. Yeah, what's for, nice. Yeah, they're like, Dad, we have to go to the store, get the Jell-O boxes. They wake up in the morning and they cut out little like cookie cutter Jello jigglers. That's awesome. And eat that.
That's amazing. I contest that they have not made Jello powder since 1978, and there's just a warehouse somewhere that is just endlessly shipping.
Right, because they made powder way too much in 1978.
Yep.
And then somebody's like, "Sugar's bad for you." What?
Oh.
What are you talking about?
We're just working through the inventory. 30 years
later. Endless inventory of Jell-O. There's like these silos, these Cold War silos of Jell-O powder.
Yeah, endless. 50 years. It's crazy.
Discarded horse hooves. Anyway, on the other side of things, I guess that's it. We're done. Oh, yeah. We didn't answer the question. Or I did. Nobody else did.
You were going to eat both at the same time, yeah. Which is awful. I would still eat ice cream.
Ice cream.
Yeah.
Ice cream. Okay. Well, you have seen an epic failure of taste here on Build It Better. Thanks for letting us in your ears. Thank you for keeping them clean.
Thank you, Jake.
See you. Thanks, later. Guys.